Mishnah Vav in Perek Yudalid, which is today's Mishnah. So Mishnah Vav. Now, remember that anything that doesn't have a shame of a kli on its own and is bottles of some other kli is not going to be mekabel tuma on its own. And most of the time that we spoke about earlier, we spoke about the coverings of various kelim. They are not considered to be a kli on its own to be mekabel tuma. And we were talking about, if you recall, back in the 12th perek, we were talking about the case of a teni that was made out of metal. And we had been mechalik between a hospital teni. With a hospital teni, the medication, bandages, and so on were put on the top of it. And then they would dispose of the used medical objects. They would throw them inside the teni and recover it with the top. But normally, if you have a normal teni, been a balabayit, it would not be mekabel tuma on the top, because the top, even though obviously people put things down on top of a closed garbage pail and so on, the main purpose of that top is not to support things, it's just to cover the garbage. And so therefore, we talk about a specific case over here, that how about if you made the top of the teni as a mirror? So kisu teni shomatecha shasui bamara. So you polished it up, and now you can use it as a mirror. I mean, in a pinch, right? But it's certainly, that's not the mirror on the wall. Who's the fairest of them all? The one in the garbage pail. And therefore, its main function is not as a mirror, because of which Rebbe Yehuda is mitaher. But according to the Chachamim, even if it's not a primary usage, it's still the very fact that the guys polished it up like that, they are metameyet. Once we're talking about mirrors, so then the question is, what is the din of a broken mirror? Which is, of course, a major issue in Harry Potter. What is the point if you have a half of a broken mirror, somebody's got another piece of that broken mirror? Anyway, what is the din of the broken mirror? A broken mirror is still considered to be a kli in those days, because they wouldn't throw out a mirror, but it would only be tameh if it were still usable. In order for it to be usable, it has to be able to, you have to be able to see your face in it. So imena marad rova panim, so then it would already be Torah, because that's not really, even as a makeup mirror, that's not really all that usable. Okay, so now the question is, what is the halacha about a kli that was broken, and then I remade that kli? We saw that there was a very special halacha in which clay matachot were different than kli eitz and kli etzem and so on, all the other kalim that we're talking about here in this perek, in that there's a din of chozrim letuma yishana. Now, it turns out that there is a fascinating machlokas that has to do with the concept of tuma yishana. Remember that tuma yishana was that if you remake the metal kli out of the metal from the original kli, then it regains the same din of tuma that it had when you broke it in order to be metayer it. And that was a machlokas, if you recall, whether that was dafka legabe tumas meis, because the takana was that people would avoid using the paraduma, or whether it was nogea all tumas, and it was because people didn't want to wait until Harif Shemesh, and it was so easy to fix anyway. So what's the big deal? Klei matachot mitamim, k'ar tamei, even when they are broken, because they are mitaharim shivurim, which means like this. It doesn't mean what it seems to be saying. It means that the kalim that are made out of matechet, even though obviously the tuma of the kli, the initial tuma, is gone, but we still view the broken pieces as being tamei in the sense that they are incipient tuma. So that if they would be made into a new kli, then the new kli would have that original tuma. So you can't call them really tahorin. They become tahar when they're broken, means that the new kalim that you make from the broken pieces, Daniel. It's craziness here. So the din is that if it's made out of metal, what's fascinating is that it's more easy to be metaher the kli after it was broken and you made it into a new kli than it would have been had you tried to been metaher it as the old kli. Okay, so it's a very misleading statement, which is much more complex than it seems to be on the surface. So again, what are we saying? Incipient tumah, it continues to be carried by broken metal kalim. However, despite the fact that that incipient tumah is built on the old tumah that was in the kli before it was broken, when the kli is reconstituted, it now is more likely to be mitaher than it was before. What does that mean? What it means is, the Mishnah will explain, is the difference in whether we're going to be makil on the hazoya. And this is true aliba the Rebbe Eliezer. We'll see what it means in a moment. Whereas Rabbi Yoshua says, no, not true. The new kalim are just as difficult to make tahar as the original kli, and einan mitarin ela shleimim. We give them the din of tahira as if they are the kalim that were whole, and not as if they have some new halacha as being more easy to be metahir because they're broken. Now, what do we mean? We mean like this. A kli became tameh from tumas meis. This is going according to the shita that we had before, that the main idea over here of Chozun Tumah Yeshana has to do with avoiding the usage of the Parah Aduma, and therefore Chazal were Metaken, that if it was Mitameh from Tumas Meis, you're still, when you put it back together again, you're still going to have to use the Parah Aduma on it, even though it was, didn't become Tameh. But there is a difference, because if somebody had been Mazah that day, on the third day, obviously, from the time of Tumah, and it broke on that day, or he broke it, or he melted it down on that day, and then he tichan, and he makes them whole on that same day, when he puts them back together again, he can do the second hazoya on the same day. Hare'elu tohorim, which is, of course, sounds crazy. How could you possibly do the Hazoya of a Parah Aduma on the same day if the Torah says it's B'yom HaShelishi and the Yom HaShevi'i? There needs to be 4 days between them. The point, therefore, clearly is that Rebbe Eliezer is saying that the fact that they are completely different kli is the equivalent of waiting 4 days. You have basically a complete Panim Chadashes. And therefore, it's irrelevant how much time passed. It got one Hazoya before. So the Tuma that it had is a Tuma of minus Hazoya 1. And when it's put together, all it needs is Hazoya 2. That's Rebbe Eliezer Shita. Rabbi Yoshua Aimer, there's no such thing. If Chazal are Metakein Tuma Yeshana, then that means that they want you to see the incipient tumah as still being present in the new kli. And therefore, how could they make a hazoya that would violate the norm of hazoya? The Rabbanan never do that when they make a takana. And therefore, in hazaya, pachot mishlishi ushvi'i, is it not true that by definition you need shlishi v'shvi'i? So therefore, it retains the same halacha over here. Now, we're moving on, and remember that these Mishnayos that close the dinim of the Hilchas, the Tumah of Klei Matechet, and the contrast of Matechet with other types of Kelim, are constructed in such a way that they are broken up into sets of different ideas of Kelim. And the set that we're talking about over here is the interesting question of sections of keys. Now, nowadays we also have very interesting keys that are like this in that certain keys are meant to function with their feminine parts, where you have all of the pins are sticking out of the actual lock. And then you put in the key, and that's the common key. So the key actually has female parts into which the parts, pins that are sticking out of the lock, are the things which will then be moved out of the way that allow you to twist the lock, and then it can open. There are also male keys in which you need to be able to fit the pins inside of the appropriate space, which then allows the lock to be moved. But there are also sophisticated keys that work in both directions. They're partially male, partially female, and they're therefore more difficult to just break into a lock like that. And there are also keys that need to be fitted into a space which forces you to build the key in such a way that it can be lowered into the lock, which means that it would have to have a knee on it. So you put it in, and then you have to be able to push it all the way down so that it engages the pins of the lock, which means that it had to be shaped with a knee and then goes out again. It's a very weird shape for a key, but otherwise you won't be able to force it down into the lock. Obviously, the keyhole was shaped as an elongated hole where you put in the key first and then pushed it down. Okay, so let's say you have a key that was made like that had a knee in it. So it's a mafter. Actually, if you imagine this, it actually looks like your foot that is lifted up. So the part of the actual foot, the lower part of your leg, the real foot with the toes, that was the key that had the pieces that your toes would be then the pins. And then as your foot is bent at the actual knee, that would be the place where it would be lowered into the hole. And then your thigh would be the top part of the key that you're holding into your hand. So if you've got a key made like that, so it's a mafter shel arkuva, it's a key with a knee, and it broke at the knee. So then you can't use that because you're not going to be able to insert that and engage the lock because you can't get it down far enough, and therefore it's tar. But Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you could still use it, even though you can't use it to get into your room, but you can use it inside, because inside, obviously, we're just concerned that you should be able to move the bolt because you're the one who's inside. So we don't make that a whole fancy part where it has to be lowered. You could just put it directly into the hole. You could still do that and be able to move the lock from inside to lock the door. As many doors, as you know, they're very irritating, but they will lock from the inside unless you have the key to open them. And therefore, it's still usable. How about a key that looks like a gamma? So a key that looks like a gamma is the same idea. So it's shel gam, it's a gamma key, and it broke in the middle of the gamma, which is the place where the key bends down, and now you only have the handle for the other side. That's also tahor. Here it's tahor even according to Rabbi Yehuda, because if all you're left with is the handle, then you've got nothing to use. The next key is talking about the male-female key. So over there you've got a key that has some pins, and it has some holes in it. So here, you broke it in such a way that all you have are the pins and holes, but you don't have the handle on it. But what happened over here is that one or the other, either the male or the female part, was busted. So it could be that the pins broke off or the holes got stuffed with junk in it. So if it had chofin vinikov, it has both the teeth and the holes in whatever is left of it, so then that part, even though it doesn't have a handle, this is talking still about the gamma key, that part is still considered to be tamei. If the, and why is that? Because if, let's say that the pins were busted off, you could still use it in a lock that is using its nikavim. If the nikavim became stuffed up, you could still use the part that has the teeth. These were usually keys that had female on top, male on the bottom, or vice versa. So you could easily have the lock constructed in such a way that it will move both parts of the lock, one with the pins and one with the holes that the pins in the lock would go into. And therefore, you could still use it for that part of the lock. But if both the pins and the holes were removed, in other words, you busted off the pins and all of the holes got filled in with dirt, or they got spread out so that there were parts of Zelatorze, now they were bent, either the pins were bent or the holes became so wide that they no longer are a place to hold a pin. So then it's tar because you can't use it in any way. Once we're talking about holes that get too large, we already want to talk about holes of a strainer, where the holes, if they get broken one into the other, they're going to start letting the parts that you don't want to get through, they're going to let it through the strainer. So if you've got a misanenet shel chardal, the mustard seeds are very, very small. So if you have three holes that ended up becoming broken, shlosha nekavim milamata, zelatorze, in the area that the mustard seed is going to go through, leaving the useless part behind, at that point it's tar because it's going to allow the dirty part of the mustard to go through also. And we have another case, which is the case of the famous Afar Chesed. In the Gemara in Chagiga, Afata Seos Nechaka Afar Chesed. What is an Afar Chesed? An Afar Chesed is a grain hopper. So it's basically a funnel where you see this all the time, by the way, on these enormous, funnels where they're taking an entire truck. They're pouring a truck out into a grain holder. There's a big funnel on top. I don't know if they're still there. You see this all the time in Haifa by the port. They had these enormous holders of grain with giant funnels on them. And the truck would empty out the entire truck into this large hopper, and then it would come down and go into the holder on the bottom. So basically shaped like a funnel. So if it's made out of matechet, then it's considered to be a kli on its own. We don't see that as only being part of the actual granary. It is a kli, and therefore it can become tameh.